that I swam in the Olympic final, the 50 freestyle, somewhere around the 480 to 500,000 times mentally over the years, just whether the race went well, whether the race went bad, where I was, everything, and all these variables obviously changed. And I've only done it once in my career. So visualization is a huge part in kind of parting the way for both success and for failure and dealing with it.
Did you say between 480 and 500,000 times?
Times, at least.
That you'd ran through the Olympic final in your race, mm-hmm. in mind?
Yes.
Welcome to the Evolution of Leaders podcast. My name is Darwin Lee, and I am a coach and speaker. I'm the founder of the Evolution of Leaders. On this podcast, I'm interested in exploring the traits, habits, or behaviors that set apart elite performers through their stories and in their own words. On this episode, I interview Brad Tandy, an amazing swimmer specializing in the 50 free, NJCAA, and NCAA champion, Pac-12 record holder in the final at the Rio Olympics, finishing sixth in a super competitive field, bronze at the World Championships in the 50 free, third fastest swimmer in the world, incredible Commonwealth Games double medalist, a superior mind, a master of visualization. I could listen to him all day. Visualized his race before Rio, the final, 480 to 500,000 times. Incredible. Learning from his experiences, just so much wisdom in his stories, and listen to the one about the first time representing his country. Hilarious and awesome. Enjoy. So when you look back at your whole career and you're one of the top swimmers in the world, can you think of what habit or what behavior you might have that sets you apart and makes you elite?
I think there are a few, and along the way, I think those change. We always, and by we, I figure athletes always have a goal, a set in mind that we try to strive through. And once we reach that goal, it's almost a bit of a disappointment because the journey is what kept us striving there. And I think for me is that I kept pushing those goals further and further along. So as I did get better in my swim career, as I did move forward, I had something new to work towards, whether it was in the college career or within the world setting of the national career as an individual. I try to find more purpose as I carried on throughout my career through the years.
More purpose. And so what does that look like to you now, now that you've matured as an athlete and still competing, still very much doing well and being your prime?
So it's just, I look back as what I would see myself as a 12-year-old Brad or 10-year-old Brad, and how excited I would be to just be able to make the national competition for trials, and just how excited I would be to do something that for me right now should be a given, and try and use that energy, that mental strength as a kid to keep driving myself forward. Because once we've achieved certain goals, we surpass them and look for the next goal. To be the fastest in the country is going to be a huge goal for a lot of younger kids, and was for me myself. And once you achieve that goal, and you've achieved that goal for 3 or 4 years, it becomes a little obsolete. It doesn't quite have the same essence of success. And I try to use that to keep building through to move on to the next thing and not forget how important it was that I had achieved those smaller goals along the way.
So it's helpful to look back and reflect.
It's helpful to look back and just know how far you have come, because once you reach that point, whatever goal you've set for yourself, as an athlete, as a professional athlete, I think it's almost a blessing and a curse, because we just want more. We want the next thing. We want to be that much better. We want to push ourselves to the next level to see how much further we can get. And I try to really remind myself how much I put in and how meaningful the goals before were moving forward.
Do you have a daily habit that you do as part of your routine that you feel helps you?
I don't. And I know that there are a lot of daily habits that can help with a lot of things. I know making the bed is one, because that's a task that you fulfill as the first thing in the morning, and I understand that concept. The reason why I've moved away from more of a structured system or things that I put in place in order to make me feel progressive, also with my nutrition as well, is that I learned early on that gets thrown out the window very quickly. For me as an athlete, if I wake up in my bed and I need to make my bed and I need to have my morning coffee and I need to make sure that I have X, Y, and Z for breakfast, get my hours of stretching in, listen to this kind of music, you fall into a habit that teaches you that's what needs to be done to be successful, or to put me in the right mindset or the right body alignment to be successful. And then you travel to another part of the country and all of a sudden you are thrown a bunch of curveballs and you can't get back into your routine. So ultimately your mind says, I'm not doing what I normally do. I'm not having my normal coffee at this time. I'm not able to listen to my type of music or eat my normal type of food. And you feel like you're being thrown off your game. And I think it's good to have specific things in place that help you keep a positive mindset of being successful, but things will never be as you plan them out to be. So it's nice to have a little bit more of a leeway, a little bit more of a spanner in the works on your day to day.
Okay. And so you intentionally give yourself, as you say, leeway and flexibility, which allows you, it sounds like from experience, to be able to adapt in different situations.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, the nutrition side alone is one of the big players. As athletes, we have to fuel our bodies as well as we can to make sure that we get the highest performance that we can out of it. And I've seen a lot of people that follow very, very, very strict diets. They're monitoring a lot, which is fantastic for their training program. And it shows great results, which I try and do as well. But then you fly off to a completely foreign country with a completely different palette of food. And all of a sudden now you are throwing your body into a complete loop that it's having to adjust to a whole new set of rules, a whole new set of foods and income. Your body will be fine to adapt to that, and your body will maintain and be able to perform. It's the mind that starts to play a role, where just because you're not doing what you have been doing as a structured plan, yeah, doesn't mean you're not going to perform well, but because it's thrown off, there's these hints of doubt that can get into your mind.
Oh, very interesting. And with athletes, mental toughness is very important. Mental training is very important. When you might be, and one of the main distances that you compete in is the 50 meter free, and very fast, kind of a furious race, where right, it's very quick and it's very, very competitive. So when you're in the last few meters of a race, or you're at the end of training, it's been a tough session and you're tired and your muscles are aching, what do you do to push through that pain and to touch the wall just a split second earlier?
That's a great question. I almost see myself in the third person and try to envision how the people that I care about most, the people that I want to make most proud, would be seeing me. If it was a coach at the time, if it was a family member, if it was a friend, if it was a loved one, even if it is me as that person, I envision either of those people mentioned seeing me and how they would be seeing me, which gives me the little bit of energy, the little bit of motivation to keep pushing through the pain, to keep at it, to make either myself or the ones I care about proud, and to see how they would see me fighting through adversity, fighting through the pain. Once you get into, I believe, in my own mindset, and you kind of enclose in your own world and bubble, it's hard to find the support that is just immediately there that you can grab from. So I try to look outwards. Also, removing myself from the situation kind of helps with not having to deal with the pain, but try to see and feel what others would be seeing, watching me at that point.
You might put yourself in the shoes of your coach, say, who might be watching, right, or someone else. Yeah. Do you visualize doing this as you run through a race?
Daily. visualization is a huge, huge part of my training. I think I did a bit of the math on it before the Rio Olympic final, that I'd swam in the Olympic final, the 50 freestyle, somewhere around the 480,000 to 500,000 times mentally over the years, just whether the race went well, whether the race went bad, where I was, everything, and all these variables obviously changed. And I've only done it once in my career. So visualization is a huge part in kind of paving the way for both success and for failure and dealing with it.
Did you say between 480 and 500,000 times?
Times, at least.
That you'd ran through the Olympic final in your race, mm-hmm. in mind?
Yes.
Wow. And so that means you're doing it all the time.
All the time. The worst time to do it is before bed, because I've gotten to a point where, and a lot of the top athletes do this, and we try and teach a lot of the younger kids to do it as well, where have a stopwatch in your hand, close your eyes, envision yourself getting up on the block or behind the starting block, envision the noise of the starter, take your marks, and on the go, press the watch and count your strokes, count your kicks, envision yourself, whether it's in the first person or third person, and the entirety of the race, and see how close you can get to finishing the race to the actual time of what it would be, to make sure that you can do the race almost blindfolded. And I've done that multiple times. I mean, like I've mentioned, and that really does allow for when the moment comes to be in a more of a relaxed state, because you can almost say, I've done this so many times before, even though this is the first and only time I've ever done it.
So when you're doing, you're touching the wall and you've seen it in your mind before, how close is it in visualization to the actual event?
So on average, I'm about 0.5 of a second off, so half a second off. The closest I've been is about 0.06 to my actual best time that I've swum. So that's kind of where I range it off of.
Amazing. Okay. So, and moving forward, kind of on the theme of the mind here, and being focused, you finished at the World Championships with the bronze. But what many might not know is that you fell ill sometime during that time. And I wonder if you can take us through that story.
Yeah. So this was 2019, I believe, World Championships. We were in China, Hangzhou, and the temperature was very, very cold. It was snowing everywhere, and we tried our best to make sure to look after ourselves. I just came from sunny South Africa, so it was a drastic change from the hemispheres. So I had to make sure that I was looking after myself. Lo and behold, I ended up falling ill. And how it generally works is that you pair up with a teammate, and he unfortunately had to leave, so I had the room to myself. I didn't want to let him fall ill. This was 3 days before the 50 freestyle prelims, which is kind of the US prelims, semis, and finals in the competition. And I was man down. I remember sleeping about 12 hours the first night, another 11 the next night, and then the night before the morning swim was meant to be another 9 to 10 hours sleep. But I got woken up early because I was told that I had another race on top of the 50 freestyle, which I wasn't aware of. Lo and behold, I was able to pull out of that race, the 100 meter IM, to focus on my 50 free race, which was way more important. And getting to the pool, doing the warm up, I just stayed in my routine. I just stayed in the mental game. And it was definitely difficult to try and get the energy physically and mentally to get in the race and do it. And I might have definitely had a little bit of the mentality that if I don't do well, it's not my fault. But I didn't want that to happen. I didn't want that to be the end goal, because I had worked so hard to get there, and this was one of the better chances I would have to be successful. So swam in the morning, not my best time, but good enough to get through to the semifinals. I think I went into the semifinals, I think I was 14th out of 16 people. So just managed to scrape through.
Yeah.
And then the semifinals were that night. So immediately went home. I was taking all my vitamin C, immune boosters, trying to just make sure that my body could fight the illness. Same thing. I slept. I woke up. I get there. I went through my normal routine of warm up, getting ready, and the same mental aspect came across my mind. I don't want to use this as an excuse to fall back on that. It's okay that you didn't make the final, Brad, because you were sick. I didn't want that to be the story that was written for that year, for my world championships, and I managed to scrape through. I think it was 7th or 8th place. Into the finals. So again, on the outside lane, which was the same lane I swam in the Rio Olympic final, I was in the outside lane and I just thought, I have a lane, I have a chance. I'm on the outside lane. No one's expecting me to do anything. No one expects me to be a threat. And I just gave it everything. I gave it my all and I got the details down. I trained with my coach vigorously on stroke count and kick count that I could almost swim it blindfolded, and I nailed it. The exact kick count, the exact stroke count to the wall, back, and a best time, and 3rd place in the world.
Wow. What was that like when you're moving forward and you're saying you're not going to let that be the story? And so how do you use that kind of general mentality into something specific that you can control, you know, leading up to and then into the race?
I think that's a great question. I think it can fall on the same, you know, the same presence, where I've worked hard enough to be here and I have what it takes to achieve what I need to achieve. I heard a saying from someone, or someone mentioned it, and it was, we're so ready to allow ourselves to fail because that's easier. And yet we find it so hard to allow ourselves to be successful. So why can't we be successful? And when it comes to those times when I am feeling healthy, I am feeling good, I think to myself, why not? Why try find an excuse to not do well when I have every reason to be successful?
And that leads you to a bronze at the World Championships, and congratulations, you know, especially in light of fighting through that. But
right.
Do you ever step back and think now, had I been healthy, kind of what are the possibilities going forward then?
Right. I do, and I try not to think of what if. Maybe I could have gone the silver, maybe I could have won it, just because that's how I planned out. That's how it came to be. But I do try and use it, like we said, when I am a little bit healthier. If I was able to do as well as I did, not at my best, imagine what I could do at my best, health-wise, physical-wise, mental strength-wise. That's definitely a nice driving point when it comes to other competition, other races as well. There are so many factors, to be honest, that fly through your mind, but you know, before a huge competition, before a huge race, walking up to the block, being on the block, it depends who you're standing next to, it depends what kind of crowd there is. The temperature of the air can have a factor, but as long as you kind of stay loose and controlled enough, which is, you know, oxymoron, counterintuitive, that you can be ready for anything to go wrong, but at the same time, know that you have a game plan, that you are doing what I do best.
Wow, that's very interesting. And when we were talking offline just a little bit, there's another interesting situation that relates to kind of a common, it's good, a common concept in mental training, mental preparation, about controlling only what you can control. And when you first entered into the international scene at the Commonwealth Games, there were a couple interesting things that happened to
you.
And we can't go forward and not hear these. So we'd love to hear your stories on the Commonwealth Games.
Of course. So 2014, I was blessed enough to qualify for the Commonwealth Games, which was my first time representing my country, South Africa, on the national stage. And that was held in Glasgow in Scotland. So my first race was the 50-meter breaststroke. And that was before my main race, the 53. So it was nice to kind of use as an icebreaker, a warm-up. So generally before big major competitions, you would line up in your lane assignment in what's called the ready room. And then they would say, okay, the next heat come out, you would stand up in single file, walk out to your, just so it's a little bit of order fashion. So they call out our heat. Next heat, please get ready. Generally at that point in time, I'm putting my cap and goggles on and getting ready to walk out. So as I'm putting my goggles on, snapped. And not a snap that I could quickly just put a knot on it and fix it. They snapped, they broke. And I had no spare pair, nothing whatsoever. So I had to run down the 50-meter pool to the opposite end where my teammates were, only not to find any of them there because they were up in the stands watching, trying to find a spare pair of goggles that I could use for my first international race. I then somehow found this poor girl somewhere, asked her, please, I need goggles. Before she could really give me permission to, I snatched them, ran down back the pool, only to realize that there were these bright, bedazzled, pink, luminous goggles that were just completely against this green cap that I had. And I figured, what? How is this happening on my first race for the national team? So my first race representing South Africa, I had my goggles snap. I stole, quote unquote, a very, very bedazzled pink pair of goggles from a poor girl who I still, to this day, have not said thank you to or could find post-race, which thankfully was able to make it through to the semifinals, which is another story in its own. The semifinals, I made sure that I brought two spare pair of goggles, a spare cap, and a spare suit just to make sure if anything did go wrong, I was prepared. Even with the preparation of the equipment that I brought on my initial start, on my dive, as I dove in the air, my dive is a little bit elaborate. I sublimated, almost dislocated my shoulder mid-air, and as I entered in the water, I had to readjust it back into position. Now, with the breaststroke, you're only allowed a certain movement before you start swimming underwater. Yeah. So because I was trying to put my shoulder back in place, I ended up getting disqualified in the race. So the second race that I competed for my national squad, I got disqualified. And that was my introduction into the international stage of swimming for South Africa.
And so you learned to bring in a spare of everything.
Yes.
And then on the second one, and we'll talk about your start a little bit later, but it's so sublimated and I know what that feels like, dislocated.
It's like a pop in and out kind of feel.
And so you're putting it back into position just after you've started your second international race.
Yeah. So I was gliding underwater and my right arm, which is the one that popped out, was kind of down to my side and my other arm was up here in streamline. I just kind of went across there and just pushed it back and then went in for the breaststroke breakout and kept swimming the race. No idea what my time was. I probably came out dead last in the heat. I have no idea. I just knew once that happened, the chances of me not being disqualified were slim.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's not happened since, hey? Your shoulder's held in pretty good.
That has not happened since. No, it has not.
And you've had a few injuries over time, and probably the most serious is the shoulder injury you had, for which you had surgery, and then you missed the London Games in 2012. So how did you handle that and use that as a positive thing moving forward? I would imagine it would have been very easy to sit back and to feel sorry for yourself. But
right.
But how did you use that then?
Again, I think I fell back on this mindset that wasn't the story I wanted to tell.
Yeah.
I have the privilege now to sit down with you and speak about my career. Had I taken that decision to say, oh, well, I'm done swimming now, or I'm not going to try as hard, or the different direction it could have gone in a negative sense, I didn't want that to be my story. I wanted to have the story that I faced adversity, that I got over shoulder surgery, that I could amount to success even through the speed humps along the way. And I didn't want, I didn't want that to be my story. I couldn't allow it to be my story that a shoulder surgery and injury, which is common in swimming, but it is a very, very major setback, would be the reason why I couldn't be as successful as I wanted to in my career.
So you clearly, you've done a lot of training and practice with the mental skills, and you're coached by Herbie Beam. And I'm wondering, what are some of the mindset tools or improvements or kind of insights working with Herbie that might have helped you to overcome a plateau or to improve a mindset in some way?
Good question. Again, I think I've learned a lot from a lot of coaches throughout the career, which has been blessed enough. And one of the things with Herbie that he spoke of is it's very easy to fall into a rut. It's very easy to fall into the same routine that we do over and over and over, because if you look at what I have done, it's obviously gotten me to where I've been, which is fantastic. But with the sport of swimming, with most sports, and even with life, you have to change things up. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect different results. There has to be a change. There has to be an improvement here, a tweak here, a little bit of an adjustment. And I think that was an important lesson that he kind of taught me, was that I can still perform as well as I need to, not doing the same things that I was. That it doesn't necessarily mean that there's a perfect equation for success, because that equation is always changing. And it changes with age, it changes with location, it changes with a lot of variables in life. And that change is constant and change is good. Most of us, when we do our personal best time in a specific race, or we do a great swim or whatever the situation would be, we immediately think, okay, what did I do to get there? What did I do for that year to make me swim that fast? And we try and replicate that as much as we can in hopes that it would be the same result. And it generally never is. It's going to take a little bit more. It's going to take a bit of changes here, a bit of changes there, to get you to a new level. And doing the same thing will not give you the same results.
Oh, okay. And so you're constantly evaluating. Yeah, absolutely. And so you're constantly reevaluating where you are in the context of your environment, your situation.
Exactly. Yeah. And that could be slight changes in stroke, slight changes in strength, just in nutrition, in life. There's always all these things, like I said, that are changing, and making sure that you yourself are monitoring it, but having other people there monitoring it as well to kind of keep you on track is important.
So last year at the World Swimming Championships, you might not have had the 50 meter race that you'd wanted. No. And you're quoted as saying, you've just got to learn. And so in general, how has failure shaped you? But, and specifically might be last year's race, but how do you maximize learning from failure, and how do you take that and move forward?
It is difficult at the time, during failure, for lack of a better term, during a lesson, I rather like to say it, tell yourself that you learn more from a failure than you would from a success, and that you can use that as fuel to drive you to want to be better, to drive yourself to make sure that doesn't happen again, like the goggles snapping, like the shoulder dislocating, making sure that you work on specific things that will have a higher chance for success. And I definitely didn't have a great 2019 World Championship swim, and it was hard for me to convince myself that's okay during the time, that's fine, that wasn't going to be the story, that wasn't going to be the end result. My swim career specifically has followed a very distinctive pattern of almost a success into a failure, a up and down sort of pattern, which I've learned is quite similar to how life can and does plan out. Most people, I'm sure there are those that have a smooth sail, to the top in success, and others that unfortunately don't. But generally in life, generally in a swimming career or in a sports career, there will be successes and there will be failures. And I have learned that without the failures, those successes aren't going to feel as great. If I didn't fight through the adversity of shoulder surgery, making the Olympic Games would not have been as much of a highlight in my career. It still would have been good, but I can say I went through a shoulder surgery to get that. I wore a random girl's pair of pink goggles on my first race. I went through illness and stood on a world podium. There's a lot of things that when a failure does come, yes, during that failure time or during that imminent period, it's hard to give yourself that positive energy. But when you look back on it, you say, this is going to be better for me. And I try to just use that as fuel to keep me driving through to the next thing.
So it's fair to say you're going to be a better swimmer as a result of what happened at last year.
Right. And that's hard to tell yourself when it happens, but you learn along the way that is definitely a good driving force.
Swimmers have, you know, all elite athletes, swimmers, but to me, being a non-swimmer, and you can correct me if I go wrong here, especially in a 50 meter where it's very compressed, a lot of nerves, it's very, very quick.
Splash and dash is what we call it.
Less room for error, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. At the 2016 Rio Olympics, you made the finals, great race in the underdog, outside lane again. So you finished sixth and there's only 0.4 from first to last. So very, very competitive race. Prior to that, okay, so going into the finals, there was maybe less pressure on you because you're outside lane and you're the underdog in some way. So there's more pressure headed into the semifinals where there's a qualification where you're trying to get to the final. So and now you've run, we've heard now 480 to 500,000 times, but there's still pressure. That doesn't mean it goes away. So how do you handle that moment mentally? You know, there's a time where it's just this one moment where we have to deliver.
Yes. First of all, one of the most nerve-wracking moments of my life. I recall seeing a video later on, about a week later, of the camera panning over me. And I don't remember this moment at all, but I was sitting there and I was just breathing. And you could tell how nervous I was. And I believe at the time, when those nerves kick in, when it comes down to this is when we have to make it or break it, those nerves, I try and tell myself, are a good thing. So if I was at the Olympic semifinals and I wasn't nervous, that would mean that I wouldn't care.
Yeah.
That the nerves are an indication that I'm doing something that means so much to me that I'm physically being affected by it because of how I'm mentally trying to adjust to it.
Yeah.
Which I use as I don't want to use the same method like as fuel, but I use it as an indicator to say I'm doing the right thing. Okay. If I wasn't nervous, if I wasn't worried about trying to perform and be my best, I wasn't in the right place. I wasn't doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And once those nerves kick in, once those butterflies start kicking in, as much as it makes you want to just tense up and get out of that situation, I say, okay, I'm on the right path. This is where I'm meant to be. Because I'd rather be sitting here against the best competitors in the world feeling this way than up in the stands and not.
So do you just allow the nerves to acknowledge and allow them to be there? Or do you try to let them melt away somehow? What did you do?
No, I open up the doors, let the nerves flood in. You perform better when you are more nervous. You have an increased heart rate, increased blood flow. Obviously adrenaline starts to kick in a little bit and it has to be controlled. You can't go overboard. Yeah. But I think the overboard factor of that is the mental side. If you allow yourself to just overhype the situation that you're in, that's when it can be a negative effect. Because you can be burning too much energy before the event that it tires you out. But if you know that what's happening is a good thing and it's a natural thing and it means that you're in the right position in your life, it can be used as a huge, huge advantage.
How much do you remember that race?
The semifinals?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So a quick story. My South African coach, Wayne Ridden, he's had a few South African Olympians, and each one has been in the 53 final, funny enough. So he told me a story about a swimmer that he had, Lyndon Ferns, and he was also made it through to the semifinals. I think this was 2008 in Beijing. And there's semifinals. There are two semifinals. Heat one and heat two. I was heat one of semifinals. And my coach told me, Wayne told me, he said, don't come fourth. Because generally, the top three in the first heat go, and then the top five in the second heat go. Because the first heat goes, the second heat gets to see how fast they need to go in order to make the qualification. So rule of thumb, not always the case, top three in the first heat, top five in the second heat. Last thing he said to me, don't come fourth before my semifinals. Lo and behold, walk up, get behind the block, do my pre-race ritual, make sure that I'm in control, let the nerves flood, use it as fuel, make it happen. And I remember swimming, stroke counts, not a lot goes too much on in that specific race itself, other than, you know, seeing the bottom of the pool, making sure that I'm just counting my strokes, doing, controlling what I can control. Touching the wall, I look back up at the big screen and I see my name. First was, I think, Florin Manadou, second Nathan Adrian, third me. And the first thing that went through my mind, coach, you better be right. Oh, you better be right, because I just did not come fourth. Lo and behold, I scraped into the finals, eighth place. And the top five of the heat two made it through. Wow. So yeah, I do remember that moment very well.
Wow. And so that obviously that worked out for you. And then
it worked out for me.
Yeah. And I can understand why going into the final, coming out of that pressure cooker.
Oh yeah.
Would be more relaxed.
Way more relaxed. It was more of the enjoyment, more of the gratefulness that I was able to walk out on the biggest stage in the final. And I could just enjoy it. I was in lane eight. No one expected anything from me. Just like back in, further along in Worlds, I could look back on it and I just said, let's just have fun. Let's just swim with a different kind of energy. Let's make memories.
Amazing. Yeah. And there's something about the way that you swim, and we'll need you to walk us through this a little bit, but you have a legendary start and it's acknowledged as one of the very few best starts in the world. And it's different, at least from the races that I've seen. It seems quite different from that of your competitors.
Yeah.
And it's been, it seems like a tremendous weapon for you,
in
a tactical weapon. And so how did you develop, you know, such a strength, such an innovation to give you something so strong and powerful in your race plan? And as you talk here, I'll flash up a picture in a couple of videos.
Okay. Yeah. So I think if you do bring it up visually, it's very different compared to most of the other starts, mainly just because when you do a start, which is measured from the starting block to 15 meters.
Yeah.
When you dive off the block, generally a lot of people don't swing their arms around and high like I do. They kind of bring them in and dive forward. Pac-12s, this is a good race.
This is you right here up in the fourth lane here. And I'll slow it down.
So the main
really see. Yeah.
Visual difference is the arm swing. So I'm using the momentum of my arms to throw them forward, as well as the explosive jump off the block. That coupled with strong underwaters, which is just good training, good core mobility and good kick, is how you drive and use that momentum that I've generated. There you can tell most, if not everyone else's arms are below their shoulder line, are beneath them. Mm-hmm. The guy in lane seven is already in streamline. My arms are directly up behind me.
Yeah.
I'm using the momentum and force of pulling against the block and allowing that to come all the way around to the front end of my entry point in the water to utilize and maximize the momentum moving forward.
It looks like a windmill almost.
It's a bit of a windmill. So it's a very exaggerated butterfly stroke. Yeah. So the same concepts that fall into the physics of butterfly, I incorporated into the start.
And so you felt very strongly this is a part of Brad Tandy's way of racing.
Yeah. Okay. Definitely. And it has become that. If I go to a competition, generally, if anyone recognizes me, they go, "The start. I love your start. Brad Tandy's start." Or I tried your start. Generally, the conversation is something about my start or my dive or Rio, which has been it's been awesome for me. You know, I would never think I would be recognized for something like that in the world of swimming. It's hard to change how much swimming really is because it's come down to such a science, and to do something that's so different to what everyone else is doing that works, it's nice. It's humbling.
Well, because Simone Biles has a few moves named after her, and
yes.
It was a couple, you know, recently, and it seems to me you should be getting the same credit for what might be something revolutionary in swimming.
Yeah. I would like to think so, but I mean, it's like I said, for some, it's some who have tried to mimic the start. It's worked well for them, and it's definitely increased their times, and it's definitely increased their performance. And vice versa, others have tried it, and they said, "Nope, not for me." Going back to what they do, and they've still been able to swim amazingly. But yeah, for her, I know the one where she lands almost blindly as she comes up. For me, is a whole another ball game. But yeah, again, I think it just falls back on the premise of what works for the athlete.
After Rio, you've cited the fact that you had really good support from your Olympic team. And so just in general, what do you think good teams do, and what do you do to try and be a good teammate?
Obviously supporting one another is a huge thing. What I have seen is there's definitely a fine line with being over supportive. At the end of the day, it is up to that individual to want it bad enough to be a good trainer, or to be smart in their nutrition, or to be smart with their mental game, whether it's visualization. So as a good teammate, I think it's good to encourage, but to encourage them to encourage themselves. There's nothing worse than someone on a pool deck or a swimmer next to you in the lane, and I'm tired, but for them to say, "You need to train harder, you've got what it takes, be better, as opposed to love these guys, as opposed to them encouraging me to want to do better. And I'm trying to think of an example, but you know, for these guys, Ryan, Doug, and Martin, this was awesome. This was such a great relay. It's also just having full confidence that they have your back. I don't for any reason, and I'll choose Douglas Erasmus. He's third from the right. He qualified in the 50 freestyle in Rio with me. So ultimately, he is a very, very big competitor of mine. We have to race each other constantly. He is one of my closest and best friends that I have in the sport, because there is not a doubt in my mind that he doesn't want the best for my swimming. And I know that he knows I want nothing but the best for him in his swimming. And being a good teammate is whether they are a competitor of yours or not, is knowing that whether I have a horrible race and get disqualified, or they have a fantastic race and make it through to the final and win gold, is that we are proud of one another for putting in the effort in a sport and in a career that we both love and appreciate. And I think that makes a great teammate, is understanding the journey and what it takes to get to where we were, to winning an African Championship relay and being on that podium and making the relationships, that is more important than who's faster.
Now, in some sports where it's based on individual qualification and then they form a team from some of the best competitors, there are sometimes is infighting and they don't get along. So inevitably, it's interesting you're bringing up that you're competitors, but you're also teammates, which on the surface might seem like a strange dynamic. And so how does communication work to address these kinds of things? And there must be times where there might be some tense moments over whatever, just people being people. But yeah, how do you handle that?
One of the things that we try just tell the teammate, because I mean there's going to be a few rivalries and there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of heated testosterone, obviously, on the race day, and it's just leave it in the pool. Just leave it in the pool.
Okay.
Or leave it on the field. You are a teammate. You are representing your country, or you're representing your team or your college. If you have something to prove, if you have something that you need to get off your chest, or if you have something that you need to do in order to either put yourself in position that I don't want to say over the person, because I mean they're still your teammate, do it in the pool, do it in the competition, put it there. And outside of it, that's where either just, you know, keep quiet and not have a say or be negative towards a teammate, because it affects more than just the person you're racing. It affects the entire team, because we're all close, we're all friends, we're all on the same journey. And if you do want to prove something, do it in the pool.
Wow, that's really refreshing to hear. I guess it's just being straightforward and then letting it be nothing beyond what it needs to be.
Right, because you can't. I guess in some way you could tiptoe around the fact, but when you're at the World Championships, when you're at the Olympic Games, when you're at Commonwealth Games, you're at one of the highest arenas in the world. To be uncompetitive, you're not in the right place. No one there is walking around not believing that they belong there.
Okay.
So those mentalities that got them there, that are, I have what it takes. I am better. I am faster. And that can escalate in either direction. That's what got them there. And that's what is a driving force. So you can't remove that from the situation of being a teammate and a competitor, which is why it has to be addressed. And the main reason why you're there is to compete. So use that mindset of I'm a competitor, you're a competitor for race day. And outside, we teammates.
Wow. Okay. And before we finish up on teamwork, we just had to show the picture of these bad boys here.
Oh, that's so awesome.
That's a great shot of you and your teammates there. So you have a very interesting kind of personal mantra, and we talked about it a little bit off the start, and I'll just read the quote here. Be great and have fun. This plays a part in what I believe makes me a successful athlete. I believe in hard work and not ever doing anything mediocre. There is no point in life, whether it's work or sports or family, to not try your best and do well. To enjoy life and enjoy sport, you surely have to be trying to be good at it to achieve success. Vice versa, to truly achieve something without happiness is not really an achievement at all. So I'm wondering if you can take us through that. And it seems like you really do live by this, and what it means to you in your life, really, not only competing.
Yeah. Quick background story. That's when I qualified for the Commonwealth Games, when I first represented my country for nationals. My uncle said that to me, who's Scottish, which is where I was going to go compete. And he said, be great, have fun. And then and there, it didn't mean anything to me. It was only later on the flight home, I kind of thought about it and I started to wrap my head around this very, very basic concept. Be great, have fun. And I was thinking, okay, obviously everybody wants to be great and have fun. That's what it's about. And once I said that to myself, I said, well, wait a minute, that's what it's about. And I start to delve deeper into this very simplistic concept that not only in swimming, which is where my basis is, but in life, in family, as I said before, if you are going to do something, if I'm going to choose swimming as a career, if I'm going to do accounting as a career, if I'm going to be a coach as a career, why not do it well? And why not give it the effort that it deserves if you're going to make the choice to do it? And most of the times, the decisions we make in life aren't going to be the things that we don't enjoy. I'm not going to choose to do something that I find no enjoyment in. It's generally something that I do enjoy, which is the have fun part. And there's this balance between these two concepts that I try and keep, which is almost impossible, but I try and keep telling myself throughout my day, throughout my training, is that in order to have fun, in order to truly have an understanding of enjoyment, you have to accomplish something. You have to be great. Because if you just have fun, generally just having fun means you're not quite working towards something or a goal or some sort of successful point, which means, are you really using your life as a valued asset? And vice versa, if you are just so concerned about getting the goal done, making sure you get it right, go to training, and you're not enjoying the process along the way, and you're not getting any satisfaction as you go through with it, are you really achieving anything? When you get that goal, are you going to look back on your career and say, all I did was put my head down and drive and pile through to get to where I was? And that balance between be great, have fun is something in swimming that's very important. I got to make sure that this is something that I do enjoy. I love swimming. I love racing. But I also want to give it the effort it deserves. So it's just it's something that is quite simple. And when you break it down in any activity that you are doing, you realize the importance and the balance that is needed in both criteria.
In the day-to-day, the grind. Hmm. There's times I'm sure where it initially might not feel fun.
No, not at all.
Would you actually change your mindset consciously?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit, because I know that, those hard workouts, those tough ones where you're trying to find the closest trash can to throw up in just in case, because you're pushing yourself that hard, it's going to result in success. It's going to result in the fun of being able to have teammates, of being able to travel, of being able to make the ones you care about proud, to be able to have that self-fulfilling notion of success. And when those sets come around, I just have to keep telling myself, this is worth it. This is what it takes. And this is going to get me to where I want to be. And as hard as it is, because all you want to do is stop swimming or stop working out or stop it. You use a lot of the variables along the way to help guide that. Should have done better at 2019. Maybe this will help me get there. You know, my story isn't written as quitting after shoulder surgery. This is going to get a better story to write on my next chapter. There's a lot of different things, a lot of different areas that you can pull from throughout your life or throughout my life that I can use as fuel, as a target to work towards in those times.
So taking a perspective back, can you think of a coach or a mentor for you that was, that had an impact on you and what you learned from them?
There has been a few, and this is a question I get asked a lot, and I think I change it up depending on the day. So I'm sure it's let it be known that I've learned a lot from a lot of mentors and a lot of coaches, and I don't mean to take away from any of those. I guess the one that comes to mind, Matthew Grievers, he's a 100 backstroke Olympic gold medalist. We trained together at my time at U of A, and for me, when I joined the college there, I hadn't qualified for nationals. I was still just pretty young and kind of learning the ropes. And he had already had world records, you know, Olympic medals, world medals. He was someone that I definitely looked up to. And the way that he approached swimming and the way that he looked at swimming and sport kind of fell well into the be great, have fun, in the fact that if you're doing what you are doing and you're enjoying it, it doesn't matter what anyone else has to say. If someone thinks that, oh, but you have the potential to do X, Y, and Z, but X, Y, and Z aren't really a goal of yours, or it's not something that you have inspired to be, and it doesn't give you the same perception of success or essence of success, then you don't have to do it for anyone else. Do what you want to do because you want to do it. And there were a lot of workouts, a lot of times where I was tired. I didn't want to get the set done. I didn't want to do another set of squats. I didn't want to do another workout in the pool, whatever it was. And he would say, well, what do you think you need to do to get to where you want to be? Just push everything aside, put the coach aside, put everyone else aside. What's your goal? What do you want? And when you put that into perspective of how you envision yourself on what you want to see yourself become, it makes things a lot clearer on where and what direction you want to go. Because your family is always going to be there to support you. Your coach is always going to be there to support you. And they always want the best for you. So do your friends and your teammates. But it's not going to help if it's not what you want. And one of the things that he definitely told me was that if you're doing what you want to do, if you're doing what you're enjoying, then you're good. Then don't stress. Then you are doing the right thing. Then you're on the right path.
What amazing stories, just really incredible tales about leadership and excellence. Grabbing the pink bedazzled goggles, awesome. If anyone knows that little girl out there, let's get those goggles back to her. Just really be a great souvenir. And then racing with a sublimated shoulder and popping it back during competitions, really tough. I think I learned, as I think about the interview, 4 main lessons from Brad about a successful mindset. I'm so grateful for the lessons. And of course, the first one about visualization, just visualizing 480,000 to 500,000 times. And it would have been more, you know, headed in towards Tokyo if I hadn't taken up an hour interviewing him. But just a very strong mental game and adapting to the environment, be it food or whatever other things around him. Really impressive. And the second is about adaptation, just showing that he's flexible and adapting. And he says tweaking here or tweaking there, and with nerves, allowing the nerves to flow in as fuel or as an indicator, and really embracing that just adapting to what his body is telling him and using that positively. Third being self-discipline, just sacrificing short-term and enduring the pain for something in the future, which are very high-level performances, world-class performances. And it's fascinating how he separates himself in that third person and kind of pulls out of himself as you know, from his own subjective view, and puts himself in the mindset of those that care about him the most and uses that to drive him, just really relying on another source to give him that extra energy and allowing him to be so elite. And the fourth being choosing success rather than allowing circumstances to choose his outcome. He's really sick at the World Championships, just refuses that to be an excuse though, and rather than allowing that to dictate what happens to him, really writing his own story, very powerful, and in so doing becomes the third fastest swimmer in the world at that meet, and just really incredible. Whether you're an elite athlete or in business or life in general, coaches can help us. And I've worked with all kinds of people, world champions, business people, moms and dads, and I've experienced the benefits of coaching myself and wanted to give back. So if you're interested to find out more, please check out evolutionofleaders.com and reach out. I'd love to hear from you. If you enjoy this, please like, subscribe, and share. Thank you so much. Make sure you get 1% better, and take care.